On episode 480 of the 40 Plus Fitness Podcast, Rachel and I discuss running longer after 40. You can find the full show notes for this episode at 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/480.
Have you decided you're ready to make a change? To reclaim your health and fitness? The 40 Plus Fitness Podcast is here for you. I'm your host, Alan Meisner. I'm an NSAM certified personal trainer with a specialization in corrective exercise and fitness nutrition. Let me be your coach as you find your way on your health and fitness journey. All right, let's go.
If you have some weight to lose, I encourage you to check out the 40 Plus Fitness GAS program. Now, GAS stands for Guidance, Accountability, and Support. And you get that and more with the 40 Plus Fitness GAS program. In this program, I help you figure out the right ways to eat and the right ways to move to get healthy and fit in a way that's right for you. This is not some cookie cutter program. This is custom coaching just for you in a small group platform. And what I mean by small group is the group will never be more than 15 people going through the same program at the same time. So you get to work with people one-on-one and as a part of a group. And so having me as your coach and having the others there for the support is really a cool, cool way to get healthy and fit and have a lot of fun doing it along the way. The people who are going through the program right now are doing great. I'm really excited about what this program can do for you. So I encourage you to go to 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/GAS. That's GAS. Get the guidance, accountability, and support you need to be successful on your health and fitness journey. Go to 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/GAS today. Hey, Raz, how are things going?
Good. How are you today, Alan?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great.
Good.
We're not really going to have much of a preamble for this one because I want to get right into the meat of this. I'm going to have my favorite running coach on the show, Rachel Everett. Aww.
Why, thank you. Thanks so much. And thanks for having me back.
So yeah, the last time you were on, we talked about training for running, just getting started running. And for most people, you know, that's going to take the form of something like a couch to 5K type program where they're just building up some basic endurance to be able to do, you know, a little over 3 miles, probably not in their overall training. They might not make it to 3 miles, but in a race, they would feel confident that they could keep going and complete the 5K, which is a 3.1 miles. Today, we're going to talk about running longer distances after 40, which is a different, it's a different beast.
A little bit.
It's something that a lot of us do, you know, because we master the 5K, or at least, you know, we realize that we're not going to be able to run it any faster than we are. So we forget PRs in the 5K and we start looking to longer distances as kind of that next challenge that's going to keep us excited about running. So, you know, Rachel, talk about some of the basic distances when someone's saying, okay, I've run the 5K, what's kind of the things that they could see coming up and training for that they would be in a really good position to reach out and do?
Well, after the 5K is the 10K and then the half marathon. And I lump those two together because they have very similar key points in training that we can talk about today. But before we get to the 10K, I want to celebrate the 5K and in that you've made it this far and you should celebrate your accomplishments because not very many people run 5Ks. But the 5K is actually a special kind of race in and of itself. It's a challenging distance. You can improve your time. You can find different races to support. You can do them all the time. You can do one or two a month or three or four a month if you are so inclined. So the 5K is really kind of like a perfect distance for running in that it will maintain your weight, it'll improve your health, and there's still a lot of joy that you can get out of the 5K for sure. But when you're ready to run longer distances after 40, the 10K I fully recommend is the next step.
Yeah. And the other things that I think is really cool about the 5K is when you're in 10K or even marathon shape, The 5K can still be a fun run. It can be a part, yes, of your training. So, you know, you do a 5K and you use that as your speed day, or you run that as an interval set. So you're trying to, sure, run a little faster and then, you know, trying to use that as that. Or, you know, when I ran my first marathon, it was the Blue Angels Marathon. The Sunday after that, they had a 5K over the bridge into Pensacola Beach. So, ooh, since I was already in town, because I didn't live in Pensacola at the time, I was like, I'll just stay over one more night. And instead of just getting up in the morning and driving, I will go ahead and get up and I will do a slow 5K as kind of just a way to get my muscles moving, because I was, yes, I was pretty certain with the first one I was going to be hurting, and I kind of mm-hmm, was, but it was good to get out there and kind of do that short distance. I mean, at the time, relative to a marathon, the shorter distance, mm-hmm, just do it casually. In fact, I was running along at one point, this woman passed me, she was pushing a stroller. So yeah, I wasn't in any hurry. And I did it. And then, you know, then I was good to go for my, I think it was something like about a 5-hour drive home.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I wasn't, you know, but if I had just gotten in the car right after the marathon and tried to do that drive, I wouldn't have recovered as well. I wouldn't. And we're going to talk a little bit about recovery later.
Yes.
But, you know, to me, it was like just a good way to flush the legs, get some more blood going through them, you know, what we call active rest.
Yes.
And so you can take these 5Ks and make them really cool. And the other thing that's really interesting about most 5Ks anyway, is there's usually a pretty cool charity associated, mm-hmm, with the 5K. Now, a lot of the 10Ks do too. And sometimes there's 5Ks and 10Ks in the same, you know, race, mm-hmm, or at least the same day. And sometimes there's even marathons, half marathons, all kind of paired together as just a, yep, pick your distance kind of deal. And a lot of times they do have charities, but what you'll find with the 5Ks is that there's a lot more participants. And as a result, those can raise quite a bit of money for charity. So, and they're typically not that much. I mean, you pay something like, I guess right now it's probably somewhere around about $30 to $40 in that range for most of, mm-hmm, most of the 5Ks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you get into some of the longer races because of the costs associated with the time and distance that you're covering. They can get a little bit more expensive. Plus, for most people that are doing marathons, there's not 5 or 6 marathons going on a month in your general location. You're going to be traveling to many of these. So, and that's also a big cool part of the whole half marathon 10K is to go someplace, mm-hmm, you've never been and make a weekend of it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I do love to plan races around vacations, or maybe vacations around races. Either way, it is nice to get out of town, that's for, yeah, sure.
Or even, yeah, work trips, because that for me, that, mm-hmm, was a big part of it, me saying, okay, you know, I happened to be working in Washington, D.C. when the Marine Corps Marathon was going on.
Oh,
and,
neat.
You know, and I also did a 10K there. And so, yeah, I just happened to be in there. And I'm like, okay, I'm flying in already. I'll just fly in a day or two early. And I'll just do this little race.
Awesome. That's wonderful.
So yeah, there's lots of opportunities to do these runs. And so Rachel, if someone is considering running longer distances after 40, what are some of the key things that they should consider?
Well, right off the bat, I would suggest you talk to your spouse and your family and friends and share your goal to run a 10K or a half marathon. Like I said, we're going to lump both these two distances together. And the reason why I say that is because you're going to be spending a little bit more time on training for this longer distance than you had done for the 5K. And what that means is there's going to be a slight disruption of the balance of responsibility at home. You're going to have to balance your responsibilities at work, and you may not have as much time to spend with your friends and social engagement. So you're going to be spending some time on training, and that might kind of disrupt the balance of your normal daily life. So share your plans with your friends and family for sure.
Yeah, I know when I started training, you know, I basically had a membership at a gym. I couldn't run around DC because it was just all concrete, and I didn't feel good running on concrete ever. Mm-hmm. I never have. I've never liked running concrete. But so I just went to the gym, and I'm like, okay, I'll do, you know, 20 minutes on the treadmill. They limited me to 20 minutes on the machine. So I'd go to a machine and do 20 minutes, and then I'd move to a different machine somewhere else and do something else. And so I was doing elliptical, I was doing stepper, I was doing all kinds of stuff. And so I've been at 20 minutes at a time. And I built up to a point where I was doing that for 4 hours. And the only way I could really do that was to leave work at 6 o'clock. And so to be able to do that, I had to be at work at, 8 o'clock and work my 10 hours and not mm-hmm. take a lunch and, to get my training in. And so, I had to talk. I even had to talk to my boss because it impacted my work schedule if I wanted to get that training in. And so that's basically what I would do. I would do 4 hours for 3 days of the week. And mm-hmm. then Friday would Thursday would be my day off. And then Friday would be another kind of medium speed day. Mm-hmm. And then Saturday and Sunday were my long runs.
Perfect.
And, but I had to do my Sunday run early in the morning. My Saturday was kind of free. I could do it when I want to. But yeah, I had to have a conversation with my significant other at the time and say, hey, I'm yes. going to be doing this run. And that means I'm not going to be at the house for potentially 3-4 hours on a Sunday.
That's right. Yeah.
While I'm going and doing this thing. And then what's your schedule look like? And just trying to make all that fit.
Yes. And when you have kids and school and other outside responsibilities, it does get kind of tricky. That's why you want to have the buy-in of all the important people in your life.
Yeah. Now, the second one you have on here is pretty interesting because I think a lot of people think to run longer distances after 40, you just run more.
Yes. And most runners like that. Most runners like to run more, but there's actually more to it. And when you're moving up to a 10K or half marathon, many of the training plans you'll find will include specific drills like speed drills, hill repeats. They will also include cross training. You don't want to spend all of your time running and hurting all your joints and just damaging your body. You just need to give your running muscles a break every now and then. So that's why there's cross training built into plans as well as rest days. So a lot of training plans will have you bike or swim. And on a rest day, it's not necessarily sitting on the couch and binge watching TV all day. They might have you do some active rest. And that could be just taking your dogs for a walk or just getting around the house, doing chores around the house, yard work, whatever, as long as you're staying busy. You don't want to sit too long.
Yeah, I know, like I said, when I was doing my training, it was kind of one of those cross training things where I was like, for at least for marathon distance, I needed to be able to move for 4 hours. That was kind of my target time, was to finish the race within 4 hours. And that's how I trained. I trained to keep my body going. I recognized that there would be hills. And so, yeah, you got to run some hills. Although mm-hmm. I was in Pensacola, so there actually weren't that many hills for my first one. Big Sur was an entirely different map. But,
yes.
You know the course, particularly if you know the course that you're going to be trying to run, understanding, okay, yeah, there's a hill. And this is, this is what people are doing. And so if you're talking to people that know the race, they'll be able to tell you, okay, yeah, there's actually a section of it that's in sand and that's really, really hard to run in. And you have to do that for a period of time. That's going to really wear your legs out if they're not stronger than you would think you would need to be to run on asphalt.
Oh, so true. Yeah, if you do have a goal race in mind, if you've picked the place where you want to run your first 10K or first half marathon, it is good to check out some of the race reports and see a description of the race to see if there's a lot of vertical gain, if there is trail or, like you said, sand. I've run a couple races in the sand. So if you know what to expect on race day, those are things that you can practice during your training to make sure that you get some extra hill repeats in there or practice on the trails and the parks around your home or something. So that type of specificity is important as you do get closer to race day. And but the other cross training things are other ways that you can build up your muscle strength and endurance as well as your cardiovascular system without beating up your legs by running day in and day out.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Okay. So now the third one you have here on our list is clothing. And so I would say with clothing, and I think we're actually going to talk about this a little bit later, but there's a lot of options out there. Some that are very bright and shiny and, fluorescent, so people can see you, which is important.
Yeah.
But you, and while people will tell you, and it's true, running can be the cheapest sport there is because you literally have all the equipment right there with you right now. You don't even have to buy shoes. You can run barefoot if you want. Most people will buy shoes, and I advise people to invest in at least one good pair of shoes to start with. But let's talk a little bit about what should people be considering with apparel, particularly when they're trying to run longer distances after 40?
Well, I'm going to start with the shoes again, because the proper fitting shoes is probably the most important gear that you can possibly have. So take a look at the bottom of the running shoes that you've been wearing and see if you can see signs of wear. And you'll see the lugs, the little knobs on the bottom of your shoe, they'll wear down in certain places after some time. You'll feel the foam on the inside, or the insole that you have in the shoe just doesn't feel quite as bouncy and cushiony as you had felt when you had first put them on. And that means the shoes have worn. There's kind of a rule of thumb. Your shoes can last anywhere between 300 and 500 miles, which sounds like a lot to a new runner, but you'd be surprised if you're wearing them on walking the dog or walks in the park, as well as during training. The shoes get beat up pretty fast. And even the foam needs about 24 days to recover after you pound them down on a run. So shoes are so critical, and I know that they are expensive because I buy a lot of them myself, but I can tell you too that they are a lot cheaper than visiting the doctor and rehabbing an injury because you stuck in the same shoes. So make sure you invest in the proper fitting shoes.
Yeah, I'm a pronator. And so the outside of my feet, you know, that part of my shoe will wear down when I'm running. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I went to a running store when I was training for the marathon. I said, okay, I'm going to be doing some running and training for it. And this, you know, as I was getting into it, and the guy goes out and he says, okay, I want you to run down the street here and then run back to me. And then he kind of sized me up and he said, okay, you're a pronator. And so he measured my foot and he's like, okay, you got a very wide toe set. So you need a wide toe box and you need something that's going to provide stability. And so he recommended a couple of different brands of shoes. I tried them on and found one that I liked, that I didn't have to mortgage my house for. And and I think the other two things I would add with shoes is, one is, more expensive doesn't necessarily mean better.
Right.
Okay, that's one thing, is, you know, just look for better, and you can pretty much go online to the running magazines, the running, really good running sites, and they'll review the shoes every year. So you can go in there and kind of get an idea, because they'll tell you, okay, yeah, this is an overpriced shoe. Don't pay $500 for this running shoe. $120 is probably about as much as you would have to spend to have a really good running shoe, and maybe even less than that in some cases. And the other thing is, I would say, wear the shoes that you're going to run in to train in. So
yes,
don't have a race pair and a training pair. Replace your shoes regularly, but have shoes that you break in and feel good with in training, because the things you do in training will reflect how you do in the race, as long as what you're doing in the race is the same thing you did in training.
Absolutely. Yep, absolutely. And don't pick out shoes by color. They're all kind of crazy colors these days. And that's okay, because then people will see you. and similarly with your apparel, with your dry fit shirts and shorts and socks and everything, this is where you're going to want to pay a little bit closer attention to what you're wearing. Now, when you were training in the 5K, you might have been running for 20 to 30 minutes at a time. And now, as you're training for a 10K or a half, that might extend into maybe 30 or 40 minutes at a time. And you might also even have a little bit of a walking warm up and maybe walking cool down. So you're going to be spending a lot of time in these clothes. And what you're going to want to watch for would be chafing and blisters on your for your socks and in your shoes. So with chafing, a lot of the tags on the neck of your shirt or in the back of your shorts, that can irritate the skin around your neck and on your back. The seams that go around your shoulders or around the bottoms of your shorts or even on your waistband, they can get irritating as well and really irritate your skin, causing chafing, which hurts a lot. You don't want that. And you won't recognize that when you're training, when you're only running for maybe 20 minutes at a time, you may not notice. But when you're wearing that same shirt or that same pair of shorts for 30 or 40 minutes, you'll start to feel this friction, which is why you want to have clothes that fit well and that have that dry wicking quality so that when they do get wet, they can dry a little bit faster and not irritate your skin quite as much.
Yeah, I had all kinds of blister problems, and I can, you know, particularly on the longer distances, and really, I didn't have a solution. They've got a lot better stuff today than they had when I was running. But moleskin is your friend. So if you do find that you're doing some training and you get a hot spot on your foot, go out and invest in some moleskin. That will save your skin and keep you from blistering. So if your shoe's giving you a hot spot, just be aware of that. You might have the wrong size shoes, as we mentioned before. So you might need to be fitted with another pair of shoes. But beyond that, moleskin can be your friend if you just start noticing the hot spot and you notice it early enough. A little bit of moleskin can go a long way. And then the other thing I'd put out there, just as some general advice, don't wear a tutu.
There is a story. Tutus are fun.
There is a story. They're fine. Skirts are probably fine. I don't know. I don't have any experience running, but we were doing a mud run. It was a Warrior Dash, and the guys were we were kind of joking around about different things we're going to wear. So we were going to wear these football jerseys. The girls wanted pink, and they voted pink, and so they got pink. And then they also wanted us wearing tutus, so we were all wearing tutus. And I'll try to find a picture of that and put it in the show notes. You can go to 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/480, and I'll see if I can have a picture of us in the tutus. But yes, chafing. I couldn't carry my arms high enough to not chafe on the tutu. So I don't advise running with a tutu.
This episode is sponsored by Exoskin Performance Athletic Apparel. There's nothing more frustrating than getting blisters or chafing on a run. It's painful, annoying, and disrupts training. I used to get blisters all the time. I've tried every sock in the market, used all the lubrication products, and even taped my feet. Finding Exoskin traditional and toe socks saved my feet. Exoskin is seamless athletic apparel that is 100% made in the USA. Every Exoskin product features their two patented fibers, PTFE and copper, which reduces friction, rapidly wicks moisture, and dries really fast. Exoskin makes a full line of apparel to cover you from head to toe. All the products are breathable and don't shift while running, which means no blisters or chafing. I've worn Exoskin socks through water puddles, mud, and in the snow, and my feet have stayed warm and blister-free, even when wet. I can't emphasize enough how much of a game changer that Exoskin has been for me. Give Exoskin apparel a try and use the discount code 40PLUS, 40PLUS, for 20% off your order. Go to www.exoskin.us and place your order using the discount code 40PLUS. Every Exoskin product is backed by a 30-day money-back guarantee. Try it for 30 days, and if you're not totally convinced, they'll give you a full refund. Once you give it a try, let me know what you think.
So, Rachel, then you talk about, I talked a little bit about this, the optional gear, the other things that you would potentially want to have with you or have on you to help you while you're going through and doing your runs.
Yes. So when you're spending more time on the road, chances are you're going to be getting up early at the crack of dawn, maybe running later at night, and reflective gear and lighted vests, any sorts of lights that you can put on your shoes, your visor, a vest, those are all going to be really important, especially if you are spending any time on the roads or where there's traffic. And there's no shortage of lights that you can get from any sort of a running or a big box athletic store. That's super important. But the second thing is that, again, now that you're spending more time outside at all different times of the year, you want to have clothes that are going to be weather appropriate and comfortable. You never know if it's going to rain on race day. So you want to make sure that you have the rain gear that you want to have to keep you as comfortable as possible while you're running in the rain or in the snow like I do up here. So go through the apparel section of your local running store and ask for input from the salespeople for maybe what type of gear that you can get for these different types of scenarios.
Yeah. One of the things that I think is really important, if you have any form of medical condition or things like that, make sure you have something on you that's going to tell someone that that's there. So like if you're allergic to certain medications or, you know, just anything else that someone should know about you, if they find you, just have that on you. So some ID, so someone can contact your someone, if they find you and they're taking you to the hospital, you're going to want that on you if you're not conscious. And not that that's going to happen to you, but you just, you know, you're going on this run. You don't necessarily want to carry a bunch of stuff. So you're not running with your purse, or maybe not running with your wallet, but you need some identification, maybe some taxi fare in case you need to, in case you just got a little too far out of hand and have to take a taxi back. But just kind of be aware, situationally aware of what your needs are. If you're doing an out and back run as your training run, you do have to make that back. And so just kind of being aware of that and having with you what you need is going to make that a much safer run.
For sure. And when I personally run long, I actually do carry my driver's license and maybe a few dollars just in case I need to buy water at the gas station or something. So I'll stick that in a Ziploc baggie so that I don't sweat all over it and stick it in one of my pockets somewhere. Yeah, there's a lot of road ID type bracelets, medical bracelets. If you do have a serious allergy or something, have your stuff with you, and as well as identification. The other part of the gear that you might consider too is some sort of a hydration item. When you're running a 10K and definitely a half marathon, you're going to be spending a lot of time on the road. And although races have aid stations in training, you're not going to find those same aid stations quite as handy. So there are handheld water bottles, which I have plenty. And I also frequently wear a hydration vest where I have a bladder and a backpack for longer distances and more water. So it's a point where, especially in the summer, when you get dehydrated, you're going to want to have water or electrolytes with you. So this would be one other item that I think would be very handy.
Yeah. One of the things I used to do was I would set up my own aid stations before I did my run. So I would drive the route that I was going to run, particularly if it was going to be an out and back or something like that. And I would set up my own aid stations and I'd have water sitting there. At each is just a little, you know, little bottle of water. And so as I came up on a location, I have that bottle of water. I'd scrunch it up and stick it in my pocket to keep going and not leave the plastic behind. But, I created my own aid stations, and, you know, that's why I encourage people, if you're going to do some training on a loop, other than when you're trying to do, you know, maybe hills or repeats or something. But if you can, try to find a lap, you know, where you're doing shorter laps. So if, let's say you wanted to go do a 5 mile training run, if those can be half mile or 1 mile laps, that's going to give you an opportunity to have that regular aid station right there where you started.
Oh, absolutely. That would be ideal. That would be perfect.
So let's dive a little bit deeper into nutrition and hydration.
This is a good topic, Alan, and I really think that we could spend probably a whole podcast talking about it because, as you know, there are going to be carb burners out there as well as the fat burners, which I am. I follow the keto type of eating. And nutrition is still a really highly individualized situation that really you just have to experiment with and see what your body needs to run long distances or fast, as well as what you can tolerate, what your stomach will tolerate. Because as you're out there for longer, your stomach may not like the things that you've been eating and you might have a problem. So, this is a big topic. If you're going to, let's start with hydration. You're going to want definitely water and or electrolytes with you, especially in the summer. If you find that you sweat a lot and you're a salty sweater and that little white grit is left on your face or on your arms, you're sweating out a lot of salt. So in that case, you're going to want some electrolyte products. Noon and UCAN are really great electrolyte products. Even Pedialyte is a proper electrolyte product. And you want to mix that up with water on occasion, just so that your stomach doesn't feel like you just had the sugar bomb dropped on it. Although there's not a lot of sugar in Noon or UCAN, just the sweetness of it can irritate your stomach. So alternating that with water is very helpful.
Yeah. You know, I think that was one of the big wake up calls for me is I was running, you know, I ran my first marathon, I think it was in the spring. And then by the time I was running my third or fourth, we were getting into the winter months. And I was running this and it was in Mississippi. It was a long, flat course. But it was, cold, really, really cold. And I actually, got more dehydrated running that race in the cold than I did running the, running the marathon in, Pensacola in the spring. And so, you know, it was warm and humid for that, for the first one. And then for this other one, it was really cold. I wasn't expecting it. And then you know, I occasionally ran by an aid station thinking I'm not thirsty. But I realized after the run that, you know, I didn't hydrate properly. And so, you know, making sure that you're staying hydrated, you know, and in your training runs, there's no one there to look after you. So you're responsible for you. And so making sure that you have what you need, and what you do in your training, again, must be something that you consider doing in the race. So don't change up your fuel. Don't change up your nutrition. I mean, your hydration. Find something that works for you. That's why you're training, so you can learn your body and learn what you're capable of. And then in the race, that's when you're going to try to push yourself. You want to be doing the same thing so that you have a base for what you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah. And this is a good point to add again, maybe having a handheld hydration water bottle of some sort is also a reminder for you to drink periodically. It's really interesting, between heat and cold running, your body is just as thirsty on both occasions. However, in the summertime, it's obvious that you're sweating, you're feeling thirsty, the air is dry, and it's almost as much of a habit as it is a physical need to drink in the summertime. Whereas in the winter, you don't feel quite as thirsty, just like you had experienced, but your body is thirsty. It's just not recognizing the same kind of sensations as you feel in the summer. So it is important to drink, whether you're on a hot day or a cold day. And if you had that handheld water bottle, that might have been a good reminder to sip at every mile or a couple miles or something.
Absolutely. So, Rachel, number six on your list, I think is maybe one of, if not the most important thing for people who are running longer distances after 40, and that's recovery.
Yes, more recovery. And then when you think you've done enough recovery, do some more recovery. This would be a good time to really prioritize foam rolling and stretching after your run. I mean, mark that on your calendar and make it an item on your calendar that you do foam rolling and stretching after your run. It's really important to loosen up those tight muscles, especially as you're adding more miles to your training program. And then if you add strength training, biking, swimming, and other activities, or on a day that you did speed work or hill repeats, you want to do more foam rolling and stretching to loosen out all those muscles that you just tightened on a run. And in addition to foam rolling and stretching, this might be a time to experiment with some compression gear. Like there are calf sleeves and arm sleeves that can help promote circulation. There are socks that go all the way up to your knee that help promote circulation. And ice baths and water baths are another recovery tool that you can experiment with.
Yeah. You know, a lot of times people will not listen to their body and they'll push and they'll push and they'll be like, well, this is what my plan is. And so they had a plan and the plan was, okay, it's Sunday, it's my long day, but they're not really recovered from the work they've done that week. And they get out there on their long run and the next thing they know, they're hurting in a way that they can't run anymore. And so your body is incredible. It's capable of doing so many incredible things, but if you don't, let it recover the way it needs to, that wear and tear. And that's one of the things that, you know, a lot of people struggle with running is it is a repetitive activity. And you know, like I said, if you're doing it on concrete, I hated that. I because one, I was heavier as a runner, so every impact on concrete for me was just huge. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I would run as light foot as I could, but at 195 pounds, there's a lot of hitting on my legs. And so I just had to be really, really careful to make sure that I wasn't overdoing it, or else I would have injured myself and potentially been out.
Well, that's a good point. And, you know, we've been raised with the no pain, no gain mantra. If it's not hurting, it's not working. But this is the time to really put that aside, especially after 40, when we are getting into these longer distances, pain becomes a different kind of signal. And, you know, your body is adapting as you're doing more miles and cross training and doing all these different things. Your body is going to have the DOMS, the delayed onset muscle soreness that you often feel when you're doing a new activity. That's fine. A little bit of ache or soreness, that's normal because you're doing all these new things and pushing your body in a way you haven't done before. However, there's a really fine line where that becomes a pain. And that is a signal to take a minute and reassess the situation. I have seen a lot of runners have a pain, which, you know, is very subjective, but it shows a stress fracture. And that stress fracture, if you don't listen to it, will become a real fracture. And then you'll be spending a lot more time on the couch than you had ever wanted to before. So there could be muscle tears. You could have tendon injuries, and it could be just inflammation, but you don't have an x-ray machine or an MRI. So this would be the point where you go to a doctor and get a proper diagnosis. And the sooner you get to the doctor, even if it's a minor pain, you'll get one, the reassurance that it's nothing more than DOMS or a muscle ache that you need a day or two off, or you'll get the treatment for a more serious condition and you'll get treated faster so that you can get back on the road faster. So pain is a signal that something is wrong and you need to do something about it.
Yeah. There's another version of recovery I kind of want to get into, mm-hmm. because for a lot of people, particularly when they start trying to run longer distances, they'll find that they get this little ache mm-hmm. right under their ribs. I would typically get it right on my right side, right up under my ribs. We called it a stitch.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, for me, there was a particular strategy because I didn't want to not finish the run. That was not enough pain. I mean, I was a pain in it. I didn't mm-hmm. like it, but it was not a kind of pain that I knew I should quit running. So if someone gets something like a stitch mm-hmm. Or something like that, what's a recovery method for them to be able to still complete the run? And know they're not hurting themselves.
Sure. I've gotten side stitches before. It's been a while, but I would stop and walk it off and do some deep breathing techniques. Try and stretch out your abdomen, do some side stretches, try and loosen up those muscles, practice some breathing, deep breathing to calm down a minute and then see how that responds. But what was your technique?
It was basically just slow down. The core mm-hmm. of it, what I knew was that my diaphragm was not aligned with the way I was running.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was just creating kind of a, for lack of a better word, a cramp in there because things were, they were getting tight and I just needed to slow down and let my breathing resume. You know, you've got to get past the ego. You know, we're over 40 now.
Yes.
I had way too much ego back then. And so, yeah, it was always just, to me, devastating that I'm like, I've got to slow down and let this go. But mm-hmm. I just knew it was not something that was going to go away on its own. I needed to slow down and let my body recover and kind of get its mojo back, for lack of a better word, so that I could complete the run.
That's absolutely perfect. And it's actually a bigger point there, Alan, because running longer distances after 40 means you do need to slow down. Your 5K pace will not be the same pace that you run a 10K at or a half marathon. So pacing yourself, slowing down is a good way to run safely and injury free, especially over 40.
Yeah. One of the things I like about the longer distances is that they become 1,000 times more social.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when you're running a 5K, for some reason or another, most people that want to have a good time, they're just running all out. There's mm-hmm. like no conversations in the first 2/3 of the pack of a 5K. The walkers in the back, yeah, they're having a blast. But
sure.
When you get into the longer distances, people kind of let go of the fact that we're racing something And it's more about completing the distance than it is about beating yourself or beating someone else. So it becomes a much more social thing as you start doing longer and longer distances. But you have one on here that I think's actually really, really cool, because a lot of times when we're trying to train, running seems like a really lonely thing. And it's kind of hard to explain. It's like, no, you'll have more conversations on a marathon because you're running for 4, maybe 5, maybe 6 hours. That's going to be one of the most social days of your year. because you're making all kinds of friends as people are running slower or faster or walking or whatever's going on in that race. But you recommend that people join a run club.
I do. And there are run clubs probably associated with the running shoe store. There could be just groups of people in your city or town that you live in. And the RRCA has a listing of run clubs. That's rrca.org, where you could look up different run clubs in your area. And the best thing about a run club is that you're going to find like-minded people trying to do the exact same thing you are. You're going to find other people trying to get faster at the 5K or maybe doing their first 10K or first half marathon, and you will find people that are your pace. And it would be so much fun to meet people at the run club nights or different days, depending on your schedule, and running with people at a similar pace is really fun. It's entertaining. It's a great way to meet people.
Yeah. And I think that you just touched on something that's really, really important is the longer runs are really are about pacing. To finish a longer run, you have to understand a pace, and to understand a pace, you have to practice a pace. So having someone else, maybe someone who's even a little bit more experienced than you, and you go into a run and you're like, okay, we're going to do an 11 minute mile for 4 miles. And so having someone who understands how to do that versus they're going to say sprint out and leave you there. And then you'll see them at the finish line, you know, later, you know, having someone there. And, you know, I think one of the coolest things is, you know, if you and Michael couldn't find a run club, you started one.
We did. Yeah, we did, because everywhere that we have moved so far, there's always somebody who also likes to run. And so why not get together and run together and enjoy some conversation and the scenery at the same time while also getting fit. So yeah, run clubs are a great way to meet people and also push your speed, because there's going to be somebody faster than you. There's also going to be somebody slower than you, but it'll be a good way to be pushed and see what other people can do.
Yeah. And it's actually really cool to have people that are faster than you. So when you do the race, they're there to cheer you when you finish.
Yes. yes. Yes.
That was what was so cool. And I ran with, what was it? Red Bud. Yeah. You guys are Red Bud. And,
We were Pea Ridge in Florida.
Pea Ridge. Yeah. Okay. Pea Ridge. Okay. And then you were Red Bud. Yep. Okay. And then, Pea Ridge. That was so cool. I ran with you guys on that one run, and everybody finished before me, I guess, because there were just so many people standing at the finish line yelling my name. And I'm like, this is so cool.
It's nice to have a bunch of people supporting what you're doing. It's just so encouraging and very motivating.
Cool. All right, Rachel. So now that someone's considered running longer distance after 40, can you kind of just go over a quick recap of the 7 things that they should be paying attention to?
Absolutely. First of all, share your plans with your friends and family and get their buy-in and support, because you're going to be spending a lot of time on the road. Make sure you find a training plan that works for you. There's a ton of training plans out there, from the Couch to 5K, which they have a 10K, Jeff Galloway, Hal Higdon. If you're having problems finding a training plan, hit me up. I could probably give you some advice on how to choose a training plan for your abilities. Proper apparel, shoes will always reign king. You need to have good shoes so that you can stay healthy, and start to look at the shirts and shorts and other apparel that will keep you comfortable for these longer distances. As far as optional gear goes, reflective gear, lighted gear, weather appropriate apparel, as well as hydration items would be nice to have, so as soon as you can afford that or find a need for it. And nutrition and hydration is very individualized. We could have a whole podcast that talks about this. And the best thing you can do is experiment with the products, the food products and drink products that agree with your stomach, and on training days. Always try it in training. And don't forget to do recovery and then maybe some more recovery. Prioritize foam rolling and stretching just like you do every other training session. Make sure you take your rest days when your training plan says to take a rest days, but that's an active rest day, not a sitting on the couch all day kind of a day. And lastly, find a run club. Get inspired and motivated by other people in your town and join other people in the same goals that you're trying to accomplish as well.
All right. Well, if you have a run that you want to do and you see it on the horizon, you want to start training for that, I'd strongly encourage you to reach out to Rachel. Rachel, your site is Strong Soul.
Strong-souls.com.
Souls.com. Yeah. Yep. Strong-souls.com. Okay. Yep. And you have a strength training course there that will help someone with their cross training as they're trying to get to these longer distances.
Yep. On the first page of my program or on my website, strong-souls.com, scroll on down to the runner's workout. That'll be emailed to you directly. And if you have any other questions, there's a contact page on the website as well.
Awesome. So you can go to 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/480, and I'll be sure to have the links there. All right, Rachel, this was a great conversation. I hope you have a great week, and we'll talk next week.
Thanks, Alan. Thanks for having me on again. Take care.
Next time on the 40 Plus Fitness Podcast, we meet Brian Barrera and discuss his book, The Ultimate Guide to Running with Your Dog, Tips and Techniques for Understanding Your Canine's Fitness and Running Temperament. Until then, have a happy and healthy week.